proceed.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, I'm Maggie Gregory with Daniel Medlin and Kirby on behalf of the appellant, the City of Danville, Virginia. I respectfully request that 3 minutes be reserved for rebuttal. The city has filed this appeal requesting this court reverse the trial court's ruling and find that the City of Danville's calculations of retirement benefits payable to the appellee, Jacqueline Garrett, are correct as a matter of law. This appeal involves pure issues of law and 3 assignments of error which stem from an underlying question, that is, whether Section 51.1.813 of the Code of Virginia is subject to the same conditions precedent as all other provisions of Article 2 in which it is contained, or whether it somehow functions as a sole universally mandated provision.
I think you need to address first, if I might be so bold to say, whether you're properly here.
Yes, Your Honor. The city's position is that we are, in fact, properly here and that the petition has been deemed properly filed by this court and that the writ of error was assigned. Certainly, the appellee has raised the question of whether or not this court has jurisdiction. It is the city's position that under Rule 5.5 of this court's rules, there is jurisdiction. Rule 5.5 provides that an extension for the time, including the time to file a petition, can be granted where at least 2 justices concur that there is good cause.
But his position is that that rule's contrary to a statute.
And that statute, Your Honor, I believe is 8.01671. Your Honor, it's the city's position that 801671 can be reasonably interpreted to address, first, granting extensions for petitions to be filed after that extension is granted. This involved a fairly unique set of facts as I understand them. And 801671 doesn't directly address the relief that was granted by this court.
Before we get to parsing language of the statute for civil and criminal, you mentioned earlier jurisdiction, but there are many forms of jurisdiction. And by rule, we cannot create subject matter jurisdiction, nor can we retract subject matter jurisdiction. By constitutional law, it's entirely a function of the legislature and the Constitution. But we are not only authorized, but we are expected to modulate active jurisdiction. That's what all of our time limits, in most cases, are doing. So the question here is whether or not we have the authority to interpret our rules and to do rulemaking to expand or contract active jurisdiction, which is not subject matter. And we've apparently done that.
Yes, Your Honor, and it's our position that you have done that correctly because as the court has acted, that granting of this petition under Rule 5.5 can coexist in harmony with 671. The relief that was in the court's order is not an extension, but actually granting the petition that was filed and responded to as filed. We would also note that the appellee, at that time the respondent, in their response to the petition, did not note any objection at that time. The court's order...
So is it your position that having responded, that there was a waiver of any claim that it was not proper? Because it's not subject matter jurisdiction. Let me start right there. And it is, as Justice Kelsey said, it is the acquiring of the case, which is active jurisdiction. And that can be waived.
Yes, Your Honor. It is the city's position that by not raising that in the response to the petition that was filed by the respondent at that time, that the respondent waived their ability to raise that issue now subsequently on the substantive appeal.
I don't want to take up all your time on this subject because I know you want to get to the merits, but I thought we had to get that out of the way first.
Thank you, Your Honor. Returning to the merits, it is the city's position that the City of Danville, as a municipality which has enacted and operates an independent retirement system, has not created a separate police retirement and pension board, and has not otherwise affirmatively adopted the provisions of Article 2 of Chapter 8 of Title 51.1 of the Code, has properly applied its own ordinances in calculating the retirement benefits that are due to Ms. Garrett. The relevant facts in this matter are actually stipulated to by the parties, and the trial court ruled that Section 51.1813 of the code took precedent over the City of Danville's own retirement ordinances. This ruling was an error. The first reason that this ruling is an error is because the trial court erred by reading 51.1813 in isolation and not as part of the broader statutory scheme of either Article 2, Chapter 8, or the title as a whole, as it was put in place by the General Assembly.
Counsel, if there is no ambiguity within the statute itself, do we then look at the context of the title, the article, or the chapter?
In this case, Your Honor, I would respectfully state that both there is ambiguity, but that in this
case...
Where is
the ambiguity within the statute itself that then allows us to go outside of the statute?
Okay. Within the statute itself, it refers to a pension plan. There has been a distinction between a pension plan and a retirement system, and the question has been, is there a pension plan or retirement and pension board involved here? Moreover, whether the statute, if the statute, as in this case, if it is read in isolation and that reading causes another statute within the article to be invalidated, contradicted, or rendered meaningless, then in that case, the statutes need to be construed in order that they can all be read in harmony.
Counsel, I'll have questions based upon your answer to this one. Have you researched the legislative history of this statute?
I have done some research on the legislative history, Your Honor.
The statute dates back 27 years to a recodification by the Virginia Code Commission in 1990. And as in all recodifications, there was a full report on the lengthy recodification process that was delivered to the General Assembly along with the recodification statute. Have you read that report?
Your Honor, I'm not sure that I have read that report, although I have read several of the reports.
Okay. So I would have questions if you had read that report, because that report doesn't seem to show the ambiguity or the tension that you indicate, but I'll pass on those questions since you haven't read it.
Certainly, Your Honor, and that ambiguity and tension really shows up when you look at Article 2 as a whole, and it's clear that the General Assembly intended for Article 2 to be read as a whole. There are multiple provisions within Article 2 that discuss the provisions of this article, the enactment of the provisions of this article. And when you read 51.1813 without reference to those remaining provisions, it renders them contradictory and inconsistent. For example, 51.1819 states, a county, city, or town may adopt the provisions of this article. It doesn't say that they have to, and it doesn't say the provisions of this article, except for 813, which is mandatory. And only after adoption and a resolution by a majority vote do these provisions become applicable.
It specifically says, upon adoption, the duties established under this article, and one of the duties is the duty we're debating today. So if it were to impose a duty on the city without adoption of the police officer's pension and retirement board, then that language would make no sense.
I would agree with you, Your Honor, that if the duty of 813 is imposed upon the city without the city's adoption of Article 2, which the city has not taken steps to adopt, that there's an inconsistency right there between the face of 813 and 819, an inconsistency that respectfully is even stronger when you look at Code Section 820, which provides the provisions, all of the provisions of this article, including all of the authorizations and all of the requirements, apply to counties having the county manager type of government. Well, if, as Ms. Garrett's position has been put forth, 813 and these provisions all applied anyway to the City of Danville, even without adoption, then 820 just doesn't make sense. It could have simply read, the provisions of this article do not apply to Arlington County. And to be clear, that is Ms. Garrett's position. It's on page 13 of her brief that every provision within Article 2 does apply to the city of Danville, regardless of whether or not they have taken steps to adopt that.
Are you aware that at the time that this was adopted in 1990, there was a doctrine that was recognized by the General Assembly that you could not reference a specific county without by name, without turning it into special legislation?
At that time, Your Honor, because Arlington County is still referenced by name, essentially the same steps would need to be taken, whether they had simply said the provisions of this article do not apply to Arlington County, or the provisions of this article apply to all counties with county manager except for Arlington County. It would seem to me that the same procedural steps would need to be taken.
Do you know how many counties had a county manager form of government in 1990?
I'm not aware in 1990 of how many counties that may have been. I understand that that number is fairly significant at this day and time.
Okay.
The trial court's ruling is also in error because it functions to nullify the City of Danville's ordinances. The City of Danville's retirement ordinances expressly cover all employees. That includes police officers and firefighters, and that's referenced in the definition at the beginning of the city's ordinances, which is Chapter 32, Section 1 and 2, that employees includes police officers and firefighters. The courts, including the trial court in this matter, erred because they chose an interpretation that not only resulted in a conflict among the code sections, but forced the City of Danville's own ordinances to be nullified. In contrast...
Why is that a problem? If the trial court were right that 813 trumps the ordinance, then it trumps the ordinance. It's not much of an argument to say, well, it can't trump my ordinance. The answer is, well, if it does, it does.
If 813 could be applied, but there are two possible interpretations, then the trial court has a duty to pick the interpretation which allows both the local ordinance and the state code to stand. Had the trial court determined that the City of Danville's ordinance applied, because under a very reasonable interpretation that 813 doesn't apply because it hasn't ever been adopted by the City of Danville, both 51.1813 and the City of Danville's ordinances could continue to coexist with Ms. Garrett on proper notice of her retirement benefits during the entire time of her employment. And I see that I am into my rebuttal time, if you would.
All right, 2 minutes, 16 seconds.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Michael Kernbach. Counsel for the appellee, Mr. Chief Justice and Justice of the Supreme Court, and I represent the petitioner in the case below, Jacqueline Garrett. Mr. Chief Justice, if I would address your jurisdiction issue that you raised earlier, it puts me in a difficult position of having to complain continuously in my brief about how the court acquired jurisdiction in the case.
Well, don't be bashful. We made a mistake. Can you just let us know?
Well, I can confess that I wasn't aware that the city had missed their filing deadline, the 3-month deadline under 8.01671A AI, until the clerk's office called me and asked me to address it by way of a motion. And in addressing your issue earlier, Mr. Justice, I can't waive active jurisdiction. The state code provision provides jurisdiction to the Supreme Court. It said 3 months, and that's what they meant, 3 months.
No, actually, you can waive active jurisdiction as a term of art. You can't waive subject matter jurisdiction as a term of art.
Well, I guess this would be subject matter jurisdiction. There'd be debate as to whether or not it's active jurisdiction. But in any event...
No, it's not subject matter jurisdiction.
It's active jurisdiction.
Right. That's the subject matter jurisdiction you can challenge anytime, any place, any way.
Right.
Active jurisdiction is much more malleable, if you will.
Right. Well, in any event, there's a violation of the state code provision here, It was amended in the General Assembly this past term to include civil cases, but that didn't apply to the facts and circumstances of this case. I will concede to the court that I missed it. It wasn't until the clerk's office called me, put me on notice that the petition for appeal was late, and then we addressed it by way of motions, which were denied, and then I raised again the error in my brief that the court doesn't have jurisdiction because it was lost once the 3 months had expired.
What did you say in your motion?
Basically, what I wrote in the brief, basically saying that the state code provides for the filing of the petition for appeal within 3 months, that there's no excuses, and that once the 3 months lapses, it lapses, and the court can't go backwards in time to deem something timely filed when it wasn't timely filed originally. It just can't be done.
Right. So
you can't unring that bell.
What do you say to the argument that you waived your objection? It sounds like you made it.
I made it when it was brought to my attention by the clerk's office. I think your counsel's office called me and notified me that I needed to file a motion objecting to the petition for appeal. But I did not have it in my opposition to the petition for appeal because I missed it.
But it doesn't matter, of course, because we ruled that we had the discretion to extend it a day, and we extended it a day, and the ruling's been done.
Right. My position is that statutorily, the court didn't have the authority to extend it by a day.
Can I cycle you to the merits? Why isn't 819 dispositive? It says, upon the city's adoption, because the city has the option, of this board, the duties, quote, established under this article, end quote, apply. Now, that seems to me to be saying, if they don't adopt it, they don't apply. Otherwise, why would you say that?
No. In interpreting 51.1-813...
Well, for a moment, just deal with 819. Upon adoption, the duties established, and 813 is one of the duties, right?
Right.
Along with a bunch of others. So upon adoption, which you concede they haven't adopted, the duties established under this article govern. Okay, well, they haven't adopted it, therefore it doesn't govern. What's wrong with that logic?
I don't think there's anything wrong with the logic that the city is making, except but for the clear, unambiguous directive under 813 that it says if any member of a police department of a city, county, or town which has a pension plan becomes disabled, they get the benefit of 66 2/3.
819 is clear and ambiguous.
It seems like an opt-in provision, isn't it? I mean, 819 is like opt-in or not. And if you don't opt-in, then none of those other provisions apply.
Well, you can look at it that way, and certainly the city has adopted the position that's how they view the opt-in provision.
Why do you say that's the wrong way to look at it?
Well, because I see 813 as a standalone provision that it's drafted, and it's a direct statement of the General Assembly that police officers who suffer line of duty injuries, that the policy of the Commonwealth of Virginia is going to award 66 2/3 rather than the 30% that the city of Danville decided to pay Ms. Garrett in her retirement benefits. It's a clear, unambiguous statement of the General Assembly going back to the Key case going in 1942 that the stated policy of the General Assembly and the Commonwealth of Virginia is to award this benefit to disabled police officers who suffer line-of-duty injuries.
Then why didn't they say in 819 that 813 is mandatory? We don't care if you adopt it or not. You're going to have to do it no matter what, which is what they said for counties.
I can't account for why that language isn't in there, other than that's why we're here. We're arguing about whether or not that needed to be in there in order for 813 to apply. We take the position that section 51.1-813 is such a broad statement by the General Assembly that it encompasses all of the pension plans other than the City of Richmond. For one reason or another, and that's going to be the stated policy of the Commonwealth of Virginia to award that disability retirement benefit. And there wasn't really any reason for an opt-in provision because if I get to the other part of my argument, there's no conflict with Chapter 32 of the City of Danville's Retirement Code, because they don't have a service incurred or a disability retirement plan for their police officers. They just have a disability retirement plan for anybody who suffers a disability working for the City of Danville. And so there's no conflict at all that needs to be addressed. There's no reason to consider an argument about a nullification of a certain part of the retirement plan, because it's a small slice of what the General Assembly has directed counties, cities, and towns that have pension plans, that they have to pay 66 2/3 of the average yearly compensation. And that's the director from the General Assembly. I don't know why, Mr. Justice, why they put that directive in 813 rather than elsewhere and swept everybody in with more specific language.
But why isn't the plan in 813 the plan administered by the board, which is optional and which has to be opted in, and which duties don't even apply unless you opt in under 819? Isn't that a very easy and fair reconciliation of 813 and 819?
Well, not if you apply the plain language of 813. It says any member which has a pension plan. It doesn't say police officers' retirement pension plan. It just identifies generically a pension plan. And by applying the plain language that the General Assembly chose to put in this statutory enactment, it means what it says, a pension plan. It could be a police officer's retirement system. It could be a private pension plan that the City of Danville set up for themselves, which they are allowed to do by the General Assembly. But it meant what it said, a pension plan. And I think the language choice by the General Assembly is broad enough to sweep into police officers' pension plans, the City of Danville pension plan, the Virginia retirement system, any pension plan that's been developed. They've had separate pension plans elsewhere. City of Richmond has a separate one. City of Norfolk has a separate one. Charlottesville has a separate one. And the stated policy of the Commonwealth of Virginia is to make sure that if you have a disabled police officer who incurs a service-connected disability retirement, that they all get the equivalent benefit, except for the City of Richmond, which was carved out. And for whatever reason, that was an exception that was made by the General Assembly at the time of the recodification of the section of the code. But to return to exactly why we're here, it's the position of the City of Danville that in order for 813 to apply, there was some sort of statutory precondition that they have a police officer's pension system in place. And that's the argument that they're making. I believe that the statute is broad enough, it encompasses enough of a sweep by the General Assembly, that the stated legislative purpose is to make sure that in this specific isolated incidents where you have disabled police officers who suffer line of duty injuries, that's going to be the stated retirement benefit. Doesn't make any sense otherwise when you read the section that is as clear and unambiguous as it is.
The real debate is whether 819 is read literally or 813 is read literally, because the stated state policy in 819 is that cities don't have any duties under this chapter unless they opt in.
Absolutely, I totally agree.
So we just got to pick which one we like better?
Not so much like, but whether or not the construction that was used by the parties in this case and the trial court makes sense in light of the legislative purpose and the humanitarian aspect of why 813 exists. If you accept the teachings of the Key case back in 1942 from Norfolk and the stated purpose of the legislation, it's to carve out a retirement benefit for those police officers that suffer line of duty injuries. I totally agree with you that it could have been put in a different part of the code section and deliberately swept in every possible permutation of retirement systems that may or may not be adopted. It just happens to be put in here with this choice of language. The only statutory reference that's made in here is 51.1-811, which are regular retirements which police officers would ordinarily take in pension plans that were set up like the city of Danville. So the city of Danville has a retirement age of age 60. So Ms. Garrett would remain on a service incurred disability retirement from her late 40s, early 50s to age 60, and then she would retire on the regular Danville retirement rate based on the teachings of this code section.
Counsel, I'm going to ask you the same question that I asked your opposing counsel. There's a whole lot in the report of the Virginia Code Commission on the revision of Title 51 of the Code of Virginia, which created both 813 and 819, and contrasts them with the statute that was in existence before then. Have you read that report?
I will concede I have not read that report. I relied on my review of the Key case and the code sections that were referenced in there, because I found them to be, Mr. Justice, I found them to be fairly consistently applied and the language applied over the years that the code sections kept on being reenacted and renumbered by the General Assembly. And so relying on that case,
I don't want to use up your time when on a document. Yeah.
No, that's fine. If there's no other questions, I will reiterate that we do have a jurisdictional conundrum to deal with before we get to the issues which are before the court. Thank you very much for your time.
All right, thank you. Rebuttal? Tell me why it is necessary to carve out the city of Richmond under 813 if they can opt out under 819.
It's an interesting question, Your Honor, and the city of Richmond has a police retirement and pension board. They are governed by a different set of principles and standards, but they do have a police retirement and pension board. And while I certainly don't know with absolute certainty, it's reasonable to believe that because they have adopted a police retirement and pension board, that without having an exception here, those other provisions could apply.
So you don't think it has anything to do with, it could not be used in any way to resolve the tension that has been identified here?
I do not think so, because unlike the city of Danville, the city of Richmond does have a police retirement and pension board.
And counsel, are you aware, I'm quoting from the report that you haven't read, are you aware that Richmond's disability formula for police injured in the line of duty equals 2/3 of compensation at the time of disability with an offset for workers' compensation received, and therefore Richmond could be carved out because it does exactly what the statute already calls for?
It could be carved out for that reason, but that wouldn't alone allow for a carving out.
Is there any other reason why the General Assembly would have carved it out other than that it was already doing what the state statute is requiring?
Well, interestingly, Your Honor, by carving it out, it actually gave the city of Richmond freedom to deviate in the future, not just the level that it would have at that day, because it would no longer be governed by these
requirements. And to your knowledge, has Richmond in the 27 years since that carve-out was created, because it had a 2/3 disability pension, has Richmond tried to change that pension?
It is my understanding that the city of Richmond's levels of benefits have only increased during
Indeed.
The interim period.
Okay.
Just very briefly, Your Honors, with regard to the Key case, we have fully briefed. The Key case is distinguishable from the facts at hand. I would ask that you incorporate those. We incorporate, again, jurisdiction has been waived throughout this matter. I'm sorry, the appellee's argument as to jurisdiction was initially waived. And based on the information provided, because actually the appellant ourselves filed the motion to consider the petition filed, not the appellee filing the initial motion, we'd argue that it was waived again. The conflict does exist between sections 813, 819, and 820, and for these reasons and for the reasons set forth in our brief, we would ask that this court reverse the ruling of the trial court and hold that the city of Danville's ordinances control the retirement of its own employees.
All right. Call the next case.